House will come to order. Would the members please register their presence by voting? Has any member failed to register their presence? Clerk may close the roll.
37 present, 3 absent.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, Representatives Huntington, Eliason, and Kelly are excused from the call of the House today. All of the members are present.
Very well. Will you please rise for prayer by Pastor W.D. Kirk of the Juneau Baptist Church.
Thank you for this new day, O Lord, that you have given unto us. And at the center of your call to all mankind is a love so incredible, so amazing. It is almost beyond belief. We pray for your grace to help us so live and to be that your incredible love may be more credible. Continue to grant, O Lord, your vision of purpose, of peace, and plenty. Would you guide each of us by your hand of righteousness, your wisdom, and knowledge to bring the vision unto reality. As the psalmist says, may the Lord give strength to his people. May the Lord bless his people with peace. In the name of Jesus we pray. Amen.
Representative Ida.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread upon the journal.
Hearing no objection, the prayer will be spread upon the journal. Will the clerk please certify to the correctness of the previous day's journal?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 73rd day.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that this body approve the journal as certified by the chief clerk for the 73rd day.
Hearing no objection, so ordered. Does the clerk have messages from the governor?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Does the clerk have messages from the Senate?
Mr. Speaker, the Senate has passed House Bill number 195 relating to Alaska National Guard active duty training with the following amendment. Page 1, line 19. Delete the opposite and insert a different. And so House Bill number 195, amended Senate, is transmitted herewith for consideration.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I've checked with the sponsor of this legislation, Mr. Bradley, and he advises me that the changes that were made by the other body were very minimal and certainly meet with his approval. I'll therefore move that this body concur with the Senate amendments to House Bill 195, and I'll ask the members to vote yes.
Question is, shall the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 195? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. The House has concurred in the Senate amendments to House Bill 195, and the clerk will so notify the Senate. Does the clerk have other messages from the Senate?
The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted herewith for consideration. Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 335 by the Resources Committee, an act relating to sport fishing, hunting, and trapping licenses and fees and providing for an effective date.
Be referred to Resources and Finance.
CS for Senate Bill number 599 by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, an act providing for instructional units for supplementary programs under the Public School Foundation Program and providing for an effective date.
Referred to the Education Committee and Finance Committee.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 644 by the State Affairs Committee, an act relating to the color of license plates.
Referred to State Affairs.
Senate Bill number 696 by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, an act making a special appropriation to the Office of the Governor, Office of Telecommunications, and providing for an effective date.
Referred to Judiciary Committee and Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Does the clerk have general communications?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Does the clerk have reports of standing committees?
The Committee on State Affairs has had House Concurrent Resolution number 84 relating to the Pilgrim Springs Road and Extension under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by McKinnon, Miller, M. Byrne, and Fisher. House Concurrent Resolution number 84 has no further referral. The Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services has had House Concurrent Resolution 105 requesting the submission of applications for funds or programs for Alaska under designation as a medically underserved area under consideration. Four of the members of the committee recommend it do pass as amended. The report was signed by Mrs. Sullivan, Chairman, concurred in by Sullivan, Davis, Hackney, and Osi. House Concurrent Resolution Number 105 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 702, providing for a special appropriation to the Department of Highways for construction of a Pilgrim Springs Road and extensions, under consideration. Three of the members of the committee recommend it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by Fisher, Miller, and McKinnon. M. Byrne has no recommendation. House Bill 702 has a further referral to Finance. The Select Committee on Education has had House Bill 859 relating to school terms under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by Hackney, Osterbach, Swanson, Davis, and Parr. House Bill 859 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 863 relating to forest protection under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Anderson, Chairman, concurred in by Anderson, Swanson, Brown, Huntington, Rode, and Smith. House Bill 863 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, have reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of resolutions.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 114 by the Resources Committee relating to the Copper River Subsistence Fishery.
Referred to Resources Committee.
House Concurrent Resolution 115 by the Resources Committee requesting the Department of Fish and Game to change the restrictive procedure for permit issuance for the Copper River Subsistence Fishery.
Referred to Resources.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 116 by the State Affairs Committee commending the contestants in the State Small Schools Championship Playoff.
Rules Committee.
House Joint Resolution 65 by the Finance Committee relating to the National Postal Service crisis.
Referred to State Affairs Committee.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, have House bills for introduction.
House Bill Number 882 by the Resources Committee, an act relating to timber salvage contracts.
Referred to Resources Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to the daily calendar. Would the clerk read the first item on the calendar?
Sponsor substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 39 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, proposing an amendment to the Alaska Constitution establishing a permanent fund for certain proceeds derived from non-renewable resources. The Committee on Finance has had sponsor substitute for House Joint Resolution 39 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass with attached amendments. The report was signed by Mr. Malone, Chairman, concurred in by Malone, Greening, Haugen, Guy, Naughton, and Itta. Mr. Duncan has no recommendation. The Committee on Judiciary has had sponsor substitute for House Joint Resolution 39 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Joint Resolution 39 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Gardner, Chairman, concurred in by Gardner, Eliason, Bradley, Cotton, Parr, Brown, and Specking. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute, the Judiciary Committee substitute, be accepted in lieu of the original bill.
Hearing no objection, the Judiciary Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, read the first amendment.
Amendment number one by Smith and Gardner. There's been a change in the ones that have been set on your desks. Page one, line 14. After or, insert old material when required.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of amendment number one.
Objections noted. Mr. Smith.
Mr. Speaker, I'm advised that this is a drafting error, that that language was omitted by mistake. It makes a lot more sense to say that they will be dedicated when required by the federal government rather than to say the federal government can require it.
Is the objection maintained?
I withdraw my objection.
The objection's withdrawn. Amendment number one is adopted. Would the clerk read the second amendment?
Amendment number two by Mr. Specking. Page one, line 21. After fund period, insert the words at least and change the capital T to a small t.
Mr. Specking.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would like to move and ask unanimous consent for adoption of amendment number two.
Okay. Objection is noted. Mr. Specking, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it appears to me that we've added some language that that makes it possible to put more than 25% into the permanent fund should at some period we so desire. with the fixed language and a constitutional change that we currently have before us, it just simply wouldn't be possible to ever add to the 25% without going through the rather lengthy and difficult procedure of an additional constitutional change. Now, it also appears to me that in an oil-rich state such as that we have, there's a, you know, a real potential for having additional revenues that could be placed in this fund. And therefore, my amendment would simply seek to make that possible should that occasion ever occur. And in my view, no way weakens the existing language. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I assume that the intention of this would be to allow future legislatures to expand above 25% if they wished to, and that it would always be at least 25%. I'd just like to know the views of the Chairman of the House Finance Committee on this amendment.
The Chairman may respond if he wishes. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I do not believe the amendment does violence to the legislation, but I question its necessity. On lines 27 and 28, page 1 of the legislation, it states that the legislature may appropriate additional amounts to the permanent fund, which shall become part of the principal of the fund. And so I'd like to ask the sponsor of the amendment why he regards the present language as insufficient.
Mr. Speckin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I think that there could be some doubt as to whether or not the 25% could ever be increased. And it appears to me that the words at least make it abundantly clear that that potential is there. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there any other discussion? Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I concur with the Finance Chairman. I think it's not at all necessary, but again, I don't see that it does any violence, so I'll remove objection.
Is there any other objection to the amendment? If there's no other objection, Amendment Number 2 is adopted. Would the clerk read the third amendment?
Amendment Number 3 by Mr. Urien. Page 1, line 25. After income-producing investments, insert, which have a guaranteed rate of return and are.
Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of Amendment Number 3.
Okay. Objections noted. Mr. Urien, you have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, in my opinion, the advantages of the permanent fund far outweigh the disadvantages, and possibly the greatest advantage would be the fact that this money will no longer be available for irrational political spending. But in addition to that, Mr. Speaker, I see the permanent fund as being a source of monies for not only maintaining but expanding our various loan programs that the state has, and therefore I would see that someday we could provide Alaskans with low interest loans for such things as homes and businesses. But in order to assure that these benefits will always exist, I think we must maintain the integrity of the fund by prohibiting constitutionally any investment in a speculative market such as the stock market, Mr. Speaker, and that's the intention of my amendment. As we all know that we can remember that infamous $900 million that's no longer with us. Out of that $900 million in 1972, we invested $18 million in the stock market, Mr. Speaker. As of July 31, 1975, we are out of the stock market, Mr. Speaker. Our loss, hard dollars, was $5,605,818. In addition to that, Mr. Speaker, if we had invested that $18 million over the past 4 years at a mere 6% interest, we would have accumulated over $4 million. So our actual loss was in excess of $10 million, which is more than 50% of the original investment. And I don't wish to see that happen again, and I urge you to adopt the amendment.
Mr. Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do object to the amendment. To begin with, the state has, and any state official who has any responsibility for management of public monies has the position of a trust. He's holding a trust for the people and is under the bond of making judgments prudently. I don't think that the amendment is necessary to cover that question. The legislation, however, line 26, states specifically that the investments will be designated by law. And, of course, what's contemplated here is that the next legislature, should this constitutional amendment be ratified, will designate the specific investment program for the permanent fund. And I would think that the question of the range of investments that the that what they are should be considered by the legislature at the time this question is settled on the establishment of the fund. I don't think we can guarantee a rate of return in a constitutional amendment. Or if we do, I'm very much afraid then we're saying that the only investments that this fund might ever make would be government securities. And I don't think that would serve to diversify the state's economic base. I think the amendment does do damage to the flexibility of the management of the fund, and I think that the amendment should be defeated.
Mr. Greening.
Mr. Speaker, I agree with Representative Urien's intent to keep speculative investments down. I think all of us have seen the lesson that was learned by some investments that were made in the past. But one of the purposes of the permanent fund, I think, is to encourage development of an economic base beyond that of extraction of non-renewable resources. And it may require an investment in the state that is somewhat more risky than a guaranteed loan. So I think we're really defeating some of the purposes, which will be discussed if this becomes part of our Constitution. If we put into the constitutional amendment something very restrictive as to how we want to develop an economic base in the state. It may take a little risk, but we're taking, after all, money that is derived from a non-renewable resource and placing it into a fund to develop a broader economic base. And that may, as a purpose of the fund, may take a little bit more risk than a guaranteed investment. So that's why I oppose the amendment.
Is there any other discussion? The question is, shall Amendment Number 3 pass the House? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Amendment Number 3 has failed to pass the House. Clerk, read the next amendment.
Amendment Number 4 by Mr. Urien. Page 1, line 29. After general fund, insert a period. Page 2, line 1, delete unless otherwise provided by law.
Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of Amendment Number 4.
Objection. Objections noted. Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, in addition to the other benefits, which I mentioned during my last argument, which I guess the body didn't care if we had the permanent fund 10 years from now or not, but in addition to those benefits, I think another benefit that the Alaskan taxpayer would receive from the permanent fund is if we mandate that the revenues produced by this fund are put into the general fund. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, we would reduce the amount of monies that may have to be raised by some sort of a tax scheme, and our taxpayers will see that decrease in their tax bill. So I urge the body to adopt the amendment.
Mr. Greening.
Sadly, I'll have to oppose this amendment, although I'm in favor of saving the taxpayers' money. The purpose of the amendment in the first place was to give more flexibility to the permanent fund. The way it now reads, it would allow deposit back into the permanent fund of the interest earned. In other words, by law, the legislature could provide that the income go back into the permanent fund to build the principal of the fund. As it now stands, it goes right back into the, if the amendment passes, right back into the general fund, which Representative Urien tells us should be kept out of our greedy hands. And I think that the purpose of the amendment really is to give flexibility so that any number of things can be done with the income, one of which could be to include it back into the principal. It's not the most crucial part of the amendment, but I think it gives it more flexibility.
Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, even with the adoption of my amendment, the language will still exist in here that says the legislature may appropriate additional amounts to the permanent fund, which shall become a part of the principal of the fund. That language exists. It will stay there. All I'm saying is let's put the money to begin with into the general fund and then let us as politicians decide where it should go.
Is there any other discussion? Mr. Malone.
Mr. Speaker, the the language that the amendment seeks to delete, unless otherwise provided by law, means, of course, unless otherwise provided by the legislature. So certainly the politicians have control over it in the final analysis.
Question? Any other discussion? Question is, shall amendment number 4 be adopted? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Amendment number 4 has failed. Clerk, read the next amendment.
Amendment number 5 by Mr. Smith. Page 1, line 21. Delete 25 and substitute 75. Line 23, insert and before bonuses and delete all after bonuses. Delete all.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of amendment number 5.
Yeah.
Objections noted. Mr. Smith, you have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, the state stands in three distinct positions in relationship to its lessees. The first is a landlord issuing leases and what have you. The second is a regulator dealing with well spacing. And the third is a sovereign imposing taxes. Now, I feel strongly that we should try to differentiate our position in regard to the income from two of those. In the case of the state as landlord, this should form our savings account. And I would like to see us put in the bank, in the permanent fund, 100% of that. But I realize this isn't possible. We've been living off our principal for some time, and it's not going to be possible to make that sort of change immediately. I think that we should reserve the taxes available to the state for the daily operation of the state. That's our checking account. And this amendment would do that by increasing to 75% the amount of revenues from our landlord status that would go into the general fund, or into the permanent fund. And it would also delete from this bill the requirement that taxes be paid into the general fund, leaving them available for the operating funds of the state. I think it's also important to remember that this is a constitutional amendment we're dealing with, so that the only way to make any changes in this in the future would be with a further amendment to the Constitution. So I think it's appropriate to look at this philosophy now, and I hope we can adopt this amendment.
Mr. Speckin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I wonder if Mr. Smith would be able to give us some comparative costs or accruals under this amendment that he proposes. How would it relate to what we would accrue in the fund under the measure as it stands at 25%?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Speaker, I can't do that because of the fact that the taxing situation is still in flux. Under our present structure, it would be probably about the same as the chart was passed out. But, of course, I think we're looking now at the whole subject of taxation of the oil industry, which is what this speaks to.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I'd have to oppose Mr. Smith's amendment, even though it might seem like a good idea. I think that there is a possibility if this amendment were to pass that the whole purpose of the permanent fund could be subverted. And one of the things the Judiciary Committee did in amendment was to add simply the word all before mineral production taxes, because we were worried about what might be future taxing policies or proposals by either the administration or the legislature. And through different leasing systems, you could come up with no bonus monies or no royalties and collect all your mineral revenues in the form of some kind of income or mineral production tax, and therefore there'd be no money going into the permanent fund. So the way we've drafted this, there in those phrases, it would cover, we felt, all the contingencies of any kind of production or bonus or royalty taxes except for property taxes. And this way, the permanent fund concept would not be able to be subverted.
Is there any other discussion? Question is, shall amendment number 5 pass the House? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Amendment number 5 has failed. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
Amendment number 6 by Mr. Anderson. Page 2, line 7. Delete all after effective and add June 30, 1979.
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the amendment be adopted.
Objections noted. Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I think if you'll recall last year, I opposed the development of a permanent fund, and I think the argument that I posed last year is still appropriate this year. I don't think that the state of Alaska can afford to pretend to tell the public that we can afford a savings account in the form of a permanent trust fund at this time. I think last year I stated that it was untimely. I don't believe that, I think the public thinks that this is a good idea. I did not argue against the merits of the bill last year. I would like to see, though, the effective date of this resolution changed to June 30th, 1979, where I think that the income from the various forms of taxation will bear us out that we can afford a permanent trust fund. I would ask the body to support the amendment. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Question is, shall amendment number 6 pass the House? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Amendment number 6 has failed to pass the House. Does the clerk have additional amendments on her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, if there are no further amendments, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Joint Resolution number 39 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Hearing no objection, committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Joint Resolution 39 will be advanced from second to third reading, placed on final passage. Would the clerk read the bill for the third and final time?
Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Joint Resolution number 39 amended by the Judiciary Committee, proposing an amendment to the Alaska Constitution establishing an Alaska Permanent Fund for certain proceeds derived from non-renewable resources.
House Joint Resolution 39 is before you for discussion and debate. Mr. Malone.
Speaker, one comment on the legislation. The members will, of course, note that in the Judiciary Committee bill that the amount of dedication was raised from 10% to 25%. That's on the recommendation of the Finance Committee. The members also have on their desks for review a projection prepared by the State Department of Revenue that would indicate even making this contribution to a permanent fund in the state of Alaska, and based on our most conservative revenue estimates, that it will allow state budget growth on the order of 15% per year. For example, a 1980 state budget of approximately $1.2 billion. I think that the constitutional amendment providing for a permanent fund at this level is a responsible action. And I think it's something that we can do for posterity now that we may not have the chance to do again in the future. And I, of course, urge the House to support the bill. And I'd be glad to answer any technical questions people may have on the projections.
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, again, I'll have to address the issue of timeliness. I don't have too much confidence in the date at which the pipeline is going to be producing royalty for the state of Alaska. I think it would be foolish for this body to think that there will be a substantial income from oil coming from the TAPS pipeline. I think there are going to be significant delays. And I think the 25% that we are setting aside, we are going to probably have to fund governmental operations. And for this reason, I think although I believe the idea of permanent trust fund is a worthy idea, I think the time is wrong. And I therefore will have to oppose the resolution.
Mr. Greening.
Mr. Speaker, in urging all the members of this House to vote for this resolution today, I would like to make it clear that I think that the time really is now for this permanent fund. The permanent fund was debated, of course, the time the state received the bonus lease monies from the sale of the oil at Prudhoe Bay. And at that time, the needs of the state were viewed as overwhelming, and I think over the years, as that money has been used to run the government, I think there is some regret that it wasn't adopted at that time. But that's now passed, but I think we can delay this thing time and time again. And probably now is the best time at which, when the state now has sufficient operating revenues to meet budgetary needs over the next next 4 or 5 years, we could put this thing into effect now. If there's a delay in the pipeline, of course, less would go into the permanent fund. I just don't see it as strapping or hamstringing the operations of government. And I think if we prolong this thing, we're defeating the very purpose for which we're asking that this become part of our Constitution, that is to start building a reserve fund to build a more viable economic base for the state. And I think the time is really right, because believe me, we'll always find needs in the future for not to, that'll call upon all non-renewable resource revenues, call upon us to use them at that time. So I think it really behooves us to act on it now while we're not under the gun.
Is there any other discussion? Mr. Malone.
Mr. Speaker, I'll touch on one point that I believe that should be mentioned. According to the projections that are prepared by the Department of Revenue, a permanent fund at the 25% level would result in a pool of capital investment available for investment within Alaska in homes and in businesses and for the good of the people in the state of approximately $2.8 billion by 1985. It's an alternative approach to using state money rather than filtering it through the state bureaucracy. It's an approach that provides direct, tangible benefits to the people of the state. I think an approach that they will endorse if we give them the chance. I would urge the House to adopt the resolution.
Is there any other discussion? So is a constitutional resolution requires two-thirds vote of the body or 27 votes. The question is, shall committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Joint Resolution 39 pass the House? The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may close the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 1 Nay, 3 Excused.
House Joint Resolution 39 has passed the House. Clerk, read the next item on the calendar.
House Joint Resolution Number 41 by H. Byrne, requesting the Secretary of the United States Department of Transportation to transfer Southeast Alaska from the Pacific Standard Time Zone to the Yukon Standard Time Zone. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Joint Resolution 41 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 41 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. McKinnon, Chairman, concurred in by Parker, Wallace, Fisher, and Miller. Mr. McKinnon signed no recommendation. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the State Affairs Committee substitute be accepted in lieu of the original resolution.
Object.
Objections noted. Mr. Brown, you have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, the original resolution that was introduced by Mrs. Byrne, I think, was a very good one. It would have simply taken Southeastern into the Yukon time zone, which geographically it ought to be. But this substitute is a very, very different piece of legislation which requests the Department of Transportation to put essentially three of the time zones in Alaska into one time zone. Involving a longitude difference which is about the same as going all the way from Denver to Miami, Florida. I don't understand the justification for the committee substitute, and I do not favor the adoption of the committee substitute.
Is there any other discussion on the adoption? Representative Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to speak to first the original bill and then the committee substitute. And the original bill, which was our original resolution, which was asked to be put in, did address itself to bringing the entire state of Alaska as close together as possible in one time zone. It still would, however, have only brought it 1 hour's difference by bringing Southeastern into the Yukon time zone, which at the present time is a very, very tiny time zone, encompassing probably no more than 100 square miles, and leaving the mass of Alaska in Anchorage time, or Alaska Hawaiian time, rather, would still have 1 hour's difference. That would have been a significant change in relation to our communication needs in the state, our transportation for efficiency in government. However, in the course of debating this, there were several other options that were made available to us, and some of the testimony indicated that our state, at least those people who responded, were willing to go another route, and that would have been not only to move southeastern Alaska, which now is in Pacific time zone, into Yukon, but to move the larger mass of Alaska, which is now Hawaiian Alaska, also into Yukon time zone. That would have brought us all into one time zone, except the Bering Sea, which is, again, one of the smaller areas of the state and which should also be addressed at a later time. After we had written up this particular substitute and were considering it, some other information came before us. And this was brought to us primarily by a person who was working on the governor's task force in efficiency in government. He did not come as a spokesman of the governor's committee, however. His main purpose on that committee was working with corrections. But in addition to this, he had taken on the project of what the lack of time, the lack of conformity of time was doing to communications and efficiency in government in Alaska. He pointed out to us that by moving the mass of Alaska into Pacific time zone, we then would be on one and the same time as the West Coast. We not only would have a time zone that we ourselves were all on, but also we would be in conformity with some of the major shipping areas, communication areas of the West Coast. He also demonstrated that in terms of the celestial time, which time is based on, such as when the sun rises and when the sun sets, and where it is at high noon, that it probably would not make that much difference. And he demonstrated that there was a possibility that, as his testimony or his research indicated, that children probably going home now at 3:30 in the afternoon would, if we were to change the mass of Alaska ahead by 2 hours, would probably be going home in the daylight about 29 days more often a year than they are at the present time. Now, it also means, however, that if there are those 2 extra hours at the end of the day, there are 2 extra hours of darkness in the morning. However, because most of us start at 7:30 or 8 in the morning, it means that they would be going to school in the dark probably only about 8 or 9 more days of the year. There was very good testimony on both sides. I feel that whichever move we make is justified. The one which is now in the committee substitute would, for all purposes, bring us into a greater approximation with some of the lower 48. It would create less of a time lag as we move back and forth across the nation. There was also another alternative suggested, which, if that is presented later on as an amendment, I will speak to also, and that is an alternative which is between the two extremes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Wallace was seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe the speaker before me perhaps may have been slightly misinformed. The testimony that we heard was that the school children would be going to school presently in the dark and going home in the dark. With the adoption of the committee substitute, the children would be going to school still in the dark for an additional 22 days, but they would never have to come home in the dark. Also, Mr. Speaker, in talking on perhaps both resolutions, is that, first of all, in speaking with daylight and darkness, is that in the wintertime, the benefits would be, of course, for the school children coming home in the daylight, and in the summertime, we don't have to worry about it because it's not dark or never gets dark. As a result, the effectiveness of the legislation would be in the springtime and in the fall time, and basically for recreational benefits of hunting. The hunting seasons are usually in the fall time, fishing and hiking or whatever. Also, the fact that regardless of which resolution we do adopt, the state efficiency would still be met because we would all be on one time zone. However, in the area of commerce, we would still be off 1 hour from the West Coast, in which in the near future, both with the crude line and hopefully with the gas line, we would still have an inconsistency in time. So I urge the adoption of the committee substitute.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I would
I'm still not convinced on the committee substitute. It seems a very strange thing to me. One of the things that bothers me is that it does not at all address the automatic inclusion into daylight saving time, which happens as a result of federal legislation several years ago. So the result, as far as I understand it, unless one of the members of the committee can correct me on this, may be that there'll be a three-hour rather than a two-hour shift for the people that are in Alaska Standard Time. That means that according to the sun, it's 9 o'clock in the morning, your clock is going to be saying that it's noon. Now, even though we do live in the land of the midnight sun, that's pretty extreme change. And I'd like to know if that issue regarding the automatic inclusion of daylight saving time was mentioned in the committee's deliberations.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, well, of course it was. The point is, Mr. Speaker, that celestial time and sun time and all this, that doesn't make any difference on a bill like this, what we call it. The important thing is, to the Alaskan who's living in Anchorage, Fairbanks, or wherever, if we adopt this resolution, he's going to get a couple of extra hours in the evening when he gets home from work, those precious daylight hours that really count the most, he's going to get a couple of extra hours to go fishing if he wants to go in the spring or in the fall, maybe to go cross-country skiing, to work a little bit on his house outside if it's not too cold. It's going to add two more hours of daylight to that portion of the day that most Alaskans can use it. And that's the important thing about this bill. It really doesn't matter a bit, you know, where the sun happens to stand up in the sky. That's, that's a nothing type issue. What's important is what it does to the individual. And it really is a good deal for the individual to have these extra hours of daylight. Of course, it also, there's other benefits, as Mr. Wallace indicated, that will accrue from either of the approaches that we use, and I suppose we'll address them after the amendments are disposed of. But right now, if we adopt the State Affairs Committee amendment, wherein everybody goes on to Pacific time, then everybody gets the maximum amount of daylight. Nobody has to give up any daylight. Everybody gets the maximum, and it's a particularly good deal, I think, the farther north you get, because the more daylight you're going to get in those hours that count.
We are on the adoption of committee substitute. Mr. Parr, then Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I have to disagree with our esteemed majority leader as to whether it's important where the sun is in the sky. If you live up in Fairbanks, it's doggone important. Secondly, if I understand this correctly, the original resolution would have moved one-third of the state's population by 1 hour. Now the committee substitute takes two-thirds of the state's population and moves it 2 hours in the opposite direction. That's a pretty bold shift of direction, I would say.
Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, there's not only celestial time and sun time, but there's show time. That's where we are today. Let's get on with the question.
Mrs. Byrne,
Mr.
on to
Speaker,
the show.
I'm not dedicated to show time at this point, but I do think it's worthwhile mentioning what daylight saving time would do. At this particular time, the southeastern part of Alaska is on permanent daylight saving time because they are, for all purposes, had voted themselves in between the years of 1927 and 1943 into Pacific time, which really puts them over in a time zone that's 1 hour ahead of what they should be. So they are already on daylight saving time. If we were to go the route of moving everything into Pacific time, and if we did not have daylight saving time, which our state can choose not to go into if they choose to vote this way, they don't have to go to the Department of Transportation to make this change, they can vote it themselves. It would leave southeastern Alaska on daylight saving time. It would bring the small area of Yakutat into double daylight saving time. And it would bring the rest of Alaska into triple daylight saving time. Incidentally, by doing this, it does put them very, very close at the time the sun rises and the sun sets in at least 6 months of the year where we can say we have any conformity at all in length of days. The other 6 months of the year, up in the central part of the state, and up in the northern part of the state, we just have so many hours of daylight or so many hours of dark that it really makes no difference anyway. It does mean that children come home in the daylight most of the days of the year. Now, what I would think that one would do if we were to ever go on this particular schedule is that the time change would take place on the day of daylight saving time. And when that time occurs this coming year, if this were adopted this year, in year 75, then Juneau should stay where it is, Yakutat should move ahead 1 hour, Anchorage should move ahead 2 hours, Fairbanks, Nome would have to move ahead 4 hours if they were to come into this, and then when it comes time to drop back, they don't drop back. And that takes care of the move during a period of time when daylight savings is being affected. It would then behoove this legislature to vote to eliminate daylight saving time in the state of Alaska, because we're already on it, either daylight triple or double.
Any other discussion? Mr. Miller.
Slight correction, Mr. Speaker, that I think the previous speaker inadvertently made. Fairbanks is on the same time as Anchorage, so there would not be an additional time over and above Anchorage's move if this were adopted.
Any other discussion? Question is, shall the State Affairs Committee substitute be adopted? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
State Affairs Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments to the committee substitute?
Amendment number 1 by Mr. Urien. Page 2, line 12. After Pacific Standard Time Zone, insert, and by shifting those portions of it located in the Bering Sea Standard Time Zone into the Alaska Standard Time Zone.
Mr. Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
I hear an objection. Objections noted, Mr. Urien.
Awful slow on the objections, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the way our time zones are laid out today, the difference in time between cities such as Anchorage or Fairbanks and places like Kotzebue, Nome, Cold Bay, and as far out as to Attu is 1 hour. The difference is today. If what we're asking for in this resolution becomes a reality, the difference between those places will be 3 hours. And I think that's maybe a sort of an undue hardship on someone. So the effect of my amendment will be to move the Bering Sea time one shift to the east, and therefore the difference of time would be 2 hours. And I think that question ought to be addressed at this time.
Mr. Brown.
Speaker, I'd like to know from what the members from the time zone addressed by the amendment think of this, the gentleman from Quetzalcoatl to the gentleman from Dillingham.
Is there any response? Mr. Wallace.
Mr. Speaker, I have talked to the respectful senator and the representative, and they have no disagreement with the amendment.
Is there any? The amendment is withdrawn. Is there any other objection? Hearing no other objection, the amendment is adopted. The clerk, read the next amendment.
Amendment number 2 by Mr. Parr. Page 2, line 7. Insert, be it resolved that the Alaska Legislature requests the governor to place on the next general election ballot the question of time zone revision. If the time zone revision is approved by a majority of those voting in the affected area, the remainder of this resolution becomes effective.
Mr. Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of Amendment Number 2.
Objections noted. Mr. Parr, you have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, not every action we take in this body affects all of our constituents. However, when we talk about something like this, we're talking about something that affects every man, woman, and child in the state, in the areas. And I realize that perhaps the Chamber of Commerce may be in favor of this, that 5% of the population that deals with Seattle may like it, but I have no way of knowing that the other 95% of the population likes it. Now, I frankly am not willing to take a step of this sort without being pretty doggone sure that my constituents are in favor of it. And I see no reason to rush through it. I think it's to wait until we have a general election ballot. The voters want it, let's do it. If they don't, we'll let it sit.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, to sit in this body is a real trust that I think all of us take very seriously. And one of the things we do when we take the oath of office here is to indicate that we're going to handle the business of the people very seriously. And I really think that aside from constitutional issues, which are of course required to go before the people, I don't think we're elected here to pass the buck on to the people. I think we're here to assess the situation, attend committee meetings, hear the evidence on both sides, make up our minds, and then vote the way we think is right. There's hardly a day goes by, Mr. Speaker, that we don't deal with two or three bills that affect every person in the state of Alaska, and in many respects affect them as much or more than this piece of legislation does. I think we would be abrogating our duty if we just said, oh no, we kind of think it's a good idea, but we're going to pass the buck and let the people make the last decision. I think if the people elect us to this sort of a position, I think, you know, we ought to live up to that expectation and decide, you know, what we think is best and vote that way.
Representative Wallace and then Mrs. Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, I was wondering about the amendment itself, if we're going to insert that and still resolve that we request the secretaries to still change the time under the correction of the amendment if it's if it is in order.
Mr. Parr.
Mr. Speaker, the intent is that if the majority of the voters approve this, the remainder of the resolution becomes effective. The remainder of the resolution says we would ask the Secretary of Transportation to make that change.
Mrs. Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, I would say that Representative Parr is correct in that, that if the voters did vote, then of course it would still have to be a request of the U.S. Department of Transportation before it could take effect. I would like to, however, just give some information which might lead Mr. Parr to believe that we have done some research into what the people are feeling. The Chamber of Commerce in Fairbanks has unequivocally said they were in favor of moving over. Now, I realize that this is the business community that we're talking about. In Anchorage, the Chamber took it up. The Executive Board was in favor of it. In a vote which came back, which I have not received the written report on, but which was given to me orally, of the 68 of those present who voted, 31% indicated that they would be willing to turn in trade over into the Pacific Trade Time Zone. Most, almost the majority of them were interested in having all of Alaska on one time zone in whatever way it goes. The Carriers Association, of course, which is more involved with highways and with our transportation than any other agency within the state, are very much in favor of and have indicated this. I've received several letters from individuals who have children. A couple of them have indicated they would like the idea because their children now would be delivering papers in the daylight rather than the dark. So, but the public as a whole has not responded. Now, I think the point is that I think it was a very wise move to put this on today while the public is going to have a chance to listen to this. They shouldn't understand that this bill, if it passes the House today, still has to go through the Senate, and they have an option to get all of their information in, their concerns, and even after that, it has to go again to the U.S. Department of Highways to for its final work. And so maybe this would give them indeed the extra time that they need in order to respond to the bill. We've already had it in the papers for a considerable length of time, and I think it's had a lot of exposure. Thank you.
Mr. Parker, then Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I'd have to vote to speak against the amendment, even though it's a good instinct, of course, to check back with the people who sent us here on whether or not we're doing well. The test, in my mind at least, on when a measure should be put on the ballot for all the people to vote on is not when it touches every person personally, because many things we do, from tax bills to almost any issue you can think of, certainly have that effect. The test is, first, is it needed by law, such as the constitutional amendment we just passed? And the answer to that, of course, in that case is yes. And second is there no other way to do it, as in cases where we petition state government to do things when the legislature can't or won't act? And because this bill doesn't pass either of those tests, it's not required, and the state legislature can act, I think it's time for us to stop the buck and vote right here in public on this.
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I want to speak in favor of Mr. Parr's amendment. When we adopted the committee substitute, we took care of the problems in my constituency. They were opposed to having their time changed. I think Mr. Parr has every right to know what his constituents feel about this before he makes a decision. I think it's a good amendment. We should adopt it.
Mr. Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, the representative from Fairbanks is, of course, right. We do live in a free country, but I'd like to associate my remarks with the representative that just spoke from Anchorage, Mr. Parker. I think the public wants leadership. I think the prior speaker from Anchorage was correct. There are three points, reading the bill, hearing the comments on the floor, and hearing the comments privately on the bill that convinced me to commit and go on record for the bill, and that's the government efficiency. It seems that by passing this, we would increase that by 40%. I think government efficiency is out of control, and no one's in charge too much on that issue. 40% raising the efficiency has got to be a plus, and it's got to save the taxpayers some money for the fiscal conservatives here. I think the leisure aspect, the leisure time aspect, is very important and crosses all party and economic lines. And I think, last but not least, though I'm not a spokesman for the Chamber of Commerce, and would never be recognized by them. The commerce conformity, I think, is at least something we should take in mind. So I'm speaking on behalf of the bill, and I think we should defeat the amendment.
Mr. Osterbeck.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I wonder if anybody looked into what this bill will do to navigation. It'll change our tide tables, current tables, and I wonder if the original sponsor can answer that question.
Mr.
Representative
Speaker,
Byrne.
The timetables certainly have come into the discussion, and of course they are changed every year, and it's a matter of changing the timetables, and it's one of the few things that we are assured of is that the tides are going to stay the same.
Mr. Parr, you wish to close on your amendment?
Yes. Mr. Speaker, I would like to point out that I don't think I have ever yet been accused of passing the buck. I'm not trying to do it now. I do think it is a matter of judgment as to when we go back to the people and when we act on our own. In my judgment, this is a time to go back to the people.
Question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Amendment number 2 has failed. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
Amendment number 3 by McKinnon and Cooper. Page 1, line 9. This is quite long. I think, has it been duplicated and placed on each member's desk? It has been duplicated, Mr. Speaker.
Amendment is on every member's desk. We will waive the reading of the amendment. Mr. McKinnon.
I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of amendment number 3.
Objections noted. Mr. McKinnon, you have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, the main purpose of this bill is to eliminate that two-hour time difference between Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau that hampers communications for business and government. As Mrs. Byrne said, we had two committee substitutes before us in state affairs. We adopted one, and the amendment that's being proposed is the other committee substitute. What that does is move Southeast Alaska into Yukon time, where it rightfully belongs, and also moves Central Alaska into Yukon time, so that we have eliminated that time difference without any real damage to anybody's sense of time, sunrise, and sunset. It gives us the tremendous advantages of improving that communication with the least disruption to anybody's personal life.
Mr. Gardner. House be at ease.
House comes to order.
Mr. Minority Leader, we may. House will be recessed for 10 minutes, and we're coming right back in and complete the calendar. House is in recess. House, come to order. For us, as committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 41, does the clerk have additional amendments? We do have an amendment before us, number 3. For the clerk, we read amendment number 3.
Amendment number
identify it.
3 by McKinnon and Cooper. To page 1, line 9. It's the one that's duplicated and on your desk.
The amendment is before us under discussion. Is there any discussion? Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I think there's a terrible amendment. This whole problem of changing time zones for everybody seems to be brought about by the fact that some people in Anchorage and Fairbanks, although when I'm ever up there, nobody ever mentions it to me, but at least some people in this legislature think that there's a time problem. And so they keep trying to move Southeast Alaska. And I don't really care what time zone Anchorage and Fairbanks on, as long as they're happy with it. And then I would be happy too, I suppose. But I think you ought to just leave Southeast alone. The people down here are happy with the time zone they're on. And this business about the right time reminds me of an incident that once happened to me. I was looking on the map here, and it reminded me of it because kind of the father of time zones or whatever point that we orient ourselves to is Greenwich in England, and this is what makes it right to be on a certain time or not a certain other time. And I happened to be in Greenwich a couple Christmases ago and went over to the National Maritime Museum because I just wanted to see what Greenwich really was. And nothing was on time there. The museums were always closed. And so when somebody tells me we got to be on the right time because we're going to conform to Greenwich, I just can't buy it. And if this amendment passes, I intend to vote against the bill or something worse.
Mr. Cooper.
Mr. Speaker, for the time being at least, there's a capital down here in Southeast, and a lot of the rest of the state has to communicate with officials down here in this capital. And the telephone systems are not really super, as some of you may have noticed. And, you know, we've got exactly 3.5 hours in a day when people from the rest of Alaska can get in or out of Juneau on the telephone because of the, you know, during regular working hours for the state of Alaska. And I think it's a severe problem that ought to be addressed. It's recognized by everybody that we ought to be on the same time zone. Now, the most equitable way to do that is to make for everybody to make certain accommodations, except, I guess, Yakutat. And I don't think it would be too much of a burden for Southeast to move back, or whichever it works, 1 hour, and for the rest of Alaska to move forward 1 hour. It just isn't that big a deal. The problem is, and I'll be glad to speak frankly since we're no longer on television. Problem is that nobody in Southeast wants to be bothered with it, you know. Maybe they don't believe it's their problem. It's everybody else's problem. And I frankly am a little resentful of that attitude. As Mr. Parr has said here earlier, it's a question of either ignoring the problem, as we've done in the past, and saying, well, we're sorry nobody wants to shift their time zone in Southeast, so there's nothing we can do about it, or having all the rest of Alaska, with 2/3 or 70% of the population, move over 2 hours to accommodate people here. And frankly, I think to move to Yukon time is a good compromise, and it shouldn't... there'll be a minimum of dislocation, and I think that the people want to see this problem addressed, and I think this is the best way to do it.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I'm afraid that I disagree with my colleague from Fairbanks on this matter, and I know that there have been projections from RCA Alascom offered regarding these various things on telephone traffic. I also know how good their projections are. The sort of thing that they do is that they use a little book based on the total number of local telephone exchange telephones, and they use national behavior from the experience of Ma Bell outside on out of every 10 phones, what are the chances that at least one or two will be making a long-distance call, which doesn't bear any relationship at all to Alaskans. And since in my business I do an awful lot of telephoning, and because of some of my interests I'm rather sensitive to the point, I really think that if we were all in the same time zone, that you'd get so darn many of those reorder fast busy signals between about 1:30 and 4:30 everybody's local time, because that's about the time when everybody would be calling. You'd tie up that new four-wire switch sitting in the Anchorage Toll Center so badly that RCA would be running around and be hauled before legislative committees asked again about why the phone system doesn't work. Now, these are just my own predictions and my own... prejudices, if you like, but I think that's really what will happen. And I think the only time I'm sure that I can get a phone call into Fairbanks to address my business is after it's 4:30 or 5 in Juneau, but it's still office hours in Fairbanks, and I know I can get through, and most of the rest of the time I can't. Now, if we had an ideal phone system, maybe it'd be otherwise, but I don't think that particular reason can be used for this. And really, Mr. Speaker, I don't even really understand why the bill came up. The rationale for the amendment, for the bill, for anything else would work only if you could prevail on the U.S. Congress to put Bangor, Maine in the same time zone as San Diego, California, because those are the kinds of lateral distances in miles and in longitude that we have in Alaska. And I think we can put up with the status quo, and I just never really understood why the bill was so pressing. I oppose the amendment, and maybe I should support it, because then if the amendment passed, then Mr. Gardner would vote against the bill. But
Representative Fisher, and then Mr.
Thanks, Freeman. Mr. Speaker. I really didn't understand a word Mr. Brown said. Especially on the telephone business, you know, that's got to be pretty far-fetched. I oppose the amendment because of the people of Southeastern and their close connection with Seattle all these years, and they certainly want to be on the same time as Seattle. And now that up north we're more in contact with Seattle, it proved the same thing. And I think that that anyone that would vote against all of Alaska being on the same time zone, if you're worried about your constituents, the only time they're going to kick about it is the day it's all changed over. Then from then on, they're going to love it. I just want, more than anything else, say that don't let the fact that the telephone service or anything is going to be any better or any worse, the mail service isn't going to be any better or any worse or anything else. If you pass this, I think it should be passed.
Mr. Freeman, then Mr. Parker.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I want to agree with Mr. Gardner. We have, our constituents are very strongly opposed to this, and Mr. Cooper talked about resentment, and I'm the first to admit that I have been a little resentful every time the attempt has been made, as the author, Ms. Burns, well aware, that of the people on Anchorage or Fairbanks making an effort to change the time in southeastern Alaska without, you know, when maybe a majority of the people here are opposed to it. However, I'm perfectly willing to vote for the committee substitute as long as if we don't adopt the amendment. My idea being that as long as you leave the people of southeastern Alaska have the time that they want, I think it's only fair and proper that we should allow the rest of the state, if they so desire, to change to that time. And because of that, I have no objection to it. But when you start forcing the people, I don't see the real rationale for it anyway. If you're going to go to Yukon time, you make everybody in southeastern unhappy, and I don't know that you're going to make the people in the westward that happy. So as a result, you please nobody. But although I said I would support the committee substitute if this amendment passed, I just can't vote for the bill because that's directly opposed to what my constituency want, and I just can't do it.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, if the bill as it's before us now, without the amendment, passes, everybody has a plus. Everybody has more daylight to enjoy, and really, Mr. Speaker, this is one of the reasons we live in Alaska. Everybody has more daylight to enjoy this beautiful state in the evening after they get off of work. And that's a basic thing with people. This is why we're here. I could do my thing as a writer in Hoboken, New Jersey, or anything else. And people here who are fishermen could fish off the coast of California or off of the Atlantic coast. All of us could do our thing, whatever it happens to be, someplace else. But there's a little magic in being in Alaska, and particularly being in a place to appreciate the outdoors in Alaska. And this bill, unamended, gives everybody that plus. It gives the people in southeastern the daylight time that they enjoy. It gives the people farther north in the Anchorage Fairbanks area actually two more hours of daylight in the evening. It also brings them the advantage that Mr. Wallace spoke of earlier, of no longer having to have the kids come home in the dark. With little toddlers, it's really great to have a little time to play out in the yard and one thing and another, in the afternoon before the sun goes down after school.
At 60 below.
Well, somebody says it's 60 below, I'll assume that a few days of the year, even in the wintertime, it doesn't quite reach those proportions. But in any case, the bill, unamended, really does offer a plus for everybody. If we put this amendment in here, it reduces the plus for the people up in Anchorage and Fairbanks, and it becomes then a minus, of course, for the people in the southeastern area. I would say one other thing, Mr. Speaker, that in the commerce of things, now I realize that all of us in this body, myself included, are not exactly fully into the commerce of this statement as members of the Chambers of Commerce and one thing or another. But I think it's important to all of Alaska, not just Chambers of Commerce meetings, members, I think it's important for all of Alaska if the cities of Fairbanks and Anchorage are on the same time zone and have the same communications, meaning hour by hour, as the major centers of population and finance on the West Coast, meaning Seattle and Portland, San Francisco, Los Angeles. The people of Anchorage, the businessmen up there, do a lot of communicating with the people in those areas. And a matter of fact, that benefits all of us when they do. So I think unamended, this bill is a real plus for all of us. amended, it becomes a real minus for a bunch of us.
We'll start with Mr. Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I won't argue with Mr. Miller that a lot of people would be able to enjoy a lot of recreational activities after work and so forth, but a lot of us that do work in the mornings, and according to the chart I have here, if Anchorage has their time changed by 2 hours, starting about the latter part of November and all of the month of December and the first part of January, the sun won't rise in Anchorage until around 11 o'clock and probably won't be light until about noon. And I just don't think I can buy that. I think I could buy Mr. McKinnon's compromise amendment, as then it would be around 10 o'clock when the sun came up, and I suppose it would get light around 11 then. Efficiency of the operation of businesses that do have to operate outside would decrease, I think. Costs would probably go up, and I think that we're not going to change the hours of daylight, but we are going to change the business hours that would be available with daylight. That's why I'm going to oppose the bill, and that's why I couldn't support the compromise amendment.
Mr. Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I get the impression that the three persons from Southeastern who have spoken do not want the Southeastern time changed. And that's their business. I have no quarrel with that. I would only ask reciprocal courtesy that they don't expect us, those of us from Fairbanks and Anchorage, to change our time either.
Mr. Gardner can respond if he wishes.
Mr. Speaker, I have a motion to take care of Mr. Parr's problem. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that House Joint Resolution number 41 be referred back to the Rules Committee.
Jack. Motion is to refer the resolution back to the Rules Committee. Is there any discussion? The question is, shall House Joint Resolution 41 be referred back to the Rules Committee? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
We'll have to rely on a roll call vote. Question is, shall House Joint Resolution number 41 be referred back to the Rules Committee? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may close the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Plenty of time. Clerk may take the roll.
Yeas, 17 nays, 5 excused.
The resolution goes securely back to the Rules Committee. Clerk, read the next item on the calendar. Mr. Greeney?
Mr. Speaker, does this mean this is a time whose idea has not come?
The clerk, read the next item on the calendar.
Senate Bill number 594 by Croft, Kurtula, Rohde, and Poland. An act providing for insurance which is unavailable on the voluntary market and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Commerce has had Senate Bill 594 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee reported back without, recommendation. The report was signed by Mr. Bradley, Chairman, concurring in the no recommendation was Freeman, Fisher, Bradley, Urien, and Rudd. Wallace signed do pass. The Committee on Judiciary has had Senate Bill 594 under consideration. A majority of the members of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Gardner, Chairman, concurred in by Parr, Cotton, Specking, and Gardner. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Miller.
Speaker, unless there are amendments, I'll move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill number 594 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Objection noted, Mr. Urien.
Speaker, our minority leader seems to have been
for, I think. Well, Mr. Urien, if you really need him, we'll stand at ease. House will stand at ease in deference to the minority leader. House come to order. Before us is Senate Bill 594. We had a motion before the body to advance. Is the objection maintained? Objections removed. Therefore, Senate Bill 594 advances from second reading and third reading will be placed before us for final passage. Would the clerk read the bill for the third and final time?
Senate Bill number 594 by Croft, Curtula, Rohde, and Poland. An act providing for insurance which is unavailable on the voluntary market and providing for an effective date.
The bill is before you for discussion and debate. Mr. Specking.
Mr. Speaker, I've been trained. Thank you. I rise to speak against the measure. And my basic reasons are that it appears to me to put somewhat of a burden on the director of the Division of Insurance that I don't think he should carry. In fact, I don't want to give it to him. It appears to me that we addressed a specific situation in our long deliberations over the medical malpractice bill, where we did provide that the director of insurance could create an insurance mechanism to take care of that problem. But I don't want to do it with a blanket authority, and it appears to me that that is what the measure before us attempts to do. And I would urge that we not adopt the measure, but rather leave to ourselves the prerogative under those special circumstances that occur of providing the relief that's needed for the specific case that comes before us. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Speaker, this bill provides a mechanism for establishing a joint underwriting association in any event where insurance is not available. Now, last year when we heard about joint underwriting associations, I wouldn't know one that bit me in the elbow. And what it is it forces a company who does not wish to write insurance in a particular field to write that insurance. And what we must not forget is that there is undoubtedly a good reason why the company doesn't want to write the insurance. There's something wrong with the system. In the case of the malpractice business, I think we approached this in the right way. We looked at modifying the whole system, not just putting on a Band-Aid, which is what a joint underwriting association is. It provides a mechanism to get the insurance, but it provides it at more cost in every place where we've had a joint underwriting association proposed as a solution to the malpractice problem. The rates have gone up, and nobody has ever proposed one as a permanent solution. It's always been a temporary approach. I think that what we need to do is, when we have a problem, tackle the whole problem. Don't have authority for putting on the Band-Aid and then walking away from the problem. This bill might not do any good. Well, probably wouldn't do any good. The one salvation is that it's the option of the director of insurance to apply it, and I suspect that he would be very reluctant to do so. But in addition to that, it just might be that the bill would do considerable harm. I suspect that the next insurance-type crisis we're likely to see is in the bonding business, the writing of performance bonds. There's already a problem, and it's increasing. Now, if we are to adopt this bill and put a standby JUA provision there, it may in fact tend to drive out companies who are marginally in the bond business now and in fact precipitate the very crisis that we seek to avoid. I think the idea is a bad one. I think that there's no point in having this emergency temporary authority. I think what we need to do is look at the problem when it happens, and I think we should defeat this bill.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to speak in favor of the bill. I think there is good reason to have a standby authority on the books, and this wasn't or isn't proposed to be a permanent solution for any problem that might occur in the future. The state of Minnesota had this on the books about 5 years ago, and when they had a medical malpractice crisis similar to what we had in Alaska, I don't know exactly what the extent was, they had something on the books that could go into effect. As you know, we knew about the so-called malpractice crisis last year, and the way it worked out, we didn't come up with any legislation to pass to solve the problem. And maybe our crisis didn't get so bad up here that we needed some kind of emergency measure. But I think that there is some amount of logic in having this authority available to the Director of Division of Insurance, and there is standards provided before he could institute such a plan, so it isn't going to be arbitrary and capricious. I think the Governor's Medical Malpractice Commission that Mr. Smith was a member of did somewhat recognize this in that their original proposal had a backup joint underwriting association provided for in the legislation the governor submitted. And I think that that was an emergency stopgap measure. After everything else failed, you would be able to institute this joint underwriting association. Now, we did not retain that in the House version of the bill, although the Senate has, and that's now in free conference. But I see that this bill as somewhat of a substitute for that, and more broadly recognizes that it could happen to something besides medical malpractice insurance. I think one of the things that came up in testimony and information before the committee, that right now, in certain areas of this state, there is a problem with fire insurance. And we're probably going to see increasing problems in all areas of insurance. And I don't know that we want it, that it isn't a wise idea to have some kind of authority to solve that problem on the books on a temporary basis, because for one reason or another, the legislature may not choose to act, or there may be disagreements between the administration or the legislature on a solution, or it may take 2 or 3 years to study the problem, and there should be at least something that allows a mechanism to provide insurance that people need.
Mr. Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to support the bill, and it's my understanding that there perhaps is a problem that exists already in terms of the fishing industry and the fact that there are many fishermen that are having a very difficult time in obtaining insurance for their boats. Now, if that is the case, I would certainly hate to see the fishing industry crippled with all that's going on in terms of with limited entry or not, and now we're coming up where they may not be able to insure their boats. And so this would be just one case in which this may be a temporary stopgap.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to inquire about the phrase on page 1, lines 16, 17, 18. He may by regulation promulgate a plan to provide the insurance or reinsurance coverage for any risks in the state which are equitably entitled to but otherwise unable to obtain the coverage. Were the members of the committee or are there other members of the House who are satisfied with that language? I'm not quite sure what which are equitably entitled to the coverage really means. What kind of standard would be applied?
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, I think that would apply to a situation, say, where there is persons who are trying to get insurance who the reason they're not insured is because they're very poor risk because they've burnt down their last 3 houses or some such thing as that. And I think that that's kind of broad language to cover that so it doesn't mean that you have to make insurance available to everyone just because you're establishing this joint underwriting association.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I just want to find out, and possibly we can find out from the director of the Division of Insurance in the gallery during an at ease or something, but the thing that bothers me is that equitably entitled means one complete thing in one area of the law, and it may mean something entirely different in insurance law. Perhaps it means what Mr. Gardner has said, but I don't know that, and I'd like to be satisfied that's true before I vote on the bill. Mr. Cooper is seeking the floor. Maybe he knows. Later I may ask for an at ease.
Mr. Cooper.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know. But I would like to inquire of one of the chairmen, maybe the chairman of whatever, I guess, Judiciary Committee, what position, if any, the Director of Insurance took with respect to this bill.
Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Speaker, the Director of Division of Insurance is opposed to the bill. I'd like to call that ease also.
Without objection, the House stand at ease. The what? House really comes to order this time. Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, the hour is late, and a number of people had commitments after 4 o'clock. I'm going to move and ask unanimous consent that the calendar be held over in its present state until tomorrow.
Hearing no objection, then the calendar will be held over until tomorrow. Mr. Miller.
Speaker, under unfinished business, I am going to move that we rescind our action in sending the time resolution to rules, but in doing so, I'm not attempting to bring the matter up right now. It, too, would come up on tomorrow's calendar, and I believe this has the concurrence of the representative who made the motion to send it to rules in the first place.
Mr. Specking.
Speaker, can we do that? Leave this, you made a motion. Can't leave it pending.
We would have to make a subsequent motion once it's brought back before us.
I would make an additional motion, but I just didn't want the members to think I was trying to pull a slicky to bring this one up and take everything else off.
Mr. Speaker.
Mrs. Byrne.
On my reconsideration on Senate Bill 476, does that automatically go over in tomorrow's calendar also? Or do I have to ask permission to hold it?
I would be on the safe side. You should move permission.
I would like to ask permission to hold that over one legislative day.
Hearing no objection, the reconsideration will be held over.
Thank you.
Pardon me. Are you sure you have the right number, Mrs. Byrne?
119.
Computational longevity bonus, Senate Bill 119, or House Bill 119?
Correct.
Would you, for clarity, would you restate your motion?
Yes. I would like to ask permission to carry over for one legislative day my reconsideration of House Bill 119.
Okay. Question is, should the reconsideration be held over for one legislative day? Hearing no objection, it will be carried over. Mr. Miller, would you make your motion?
Mr. Speaker, I'm assuming that there was unanimous consent on taking it from the rules, rescinding our action and placing it in the Rules Committee. I'll now move that the resolution, I'm sorry, I don't have the number, 39, I believe, be held over and placed on tomorrow's calendar.
Hearing no objection, Mr. Freeman.
Is there something going on here that I don't quite follow? Mr. Miller says there's no trickery. I'd just like to understand what we're doing here and why.
Mr. Speaker, there's no trickery. I obviously would like to see the bill considered. I think one reason the members of the body might want to see it considered is, quite truthfully, I think it makes us look just a little bit less than bright for us to debate the thing for 40 minutes on TV, and then the minute the cameras go off, say, hey, the show's over, let's put it back in rules. And I think that's the impression that somebody might get. So I do think that we should,
Mr. Speckin.
That's the problem.
Mr. Speaker, the bill's in rules now. We moved it back to rules. I think that technically you've got to read calendar. I'm not sure that we've used the right...
Mr. Specking, I discussed that with some of the members and indicated that I felt when you make a motion on the same day to refer a bill and that the bill is, you know, in essence still on the clerk's desk, that often such motions are done on a very close margin and sometimes in confusion, and it would be treated that it still is in our possession and eligible for a rescinding action. On a subsequent day, that certainly would not be treated as simply a rescinding action. I would not accept the motion to rescind tomorrow to accept a rescinding motion. But I think on the same legislative day that it is quite in order to do that. Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Miller makes a good point. I withdraw the objection.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I'd just like to inquire the Rules Chairman, because we are holding over a very large portion of our calendar today, and there are two more bills listed there, whether it's his intention to keep the same proposed calendar. I admit that I have a reason for asking that relating to conflict. I have a meeting that is starting at 2 o'clock tomorrow with some people that are flying in and then flying out right afterward, and I I wouldn't want to miss the debate here or be hauled out of the meeting under a call to the House.
Mr. Brown, to clarify the situation, Mr. Parker could include on that calendar any additional material from the proposed. House come to order. We are under unfinished business. Under unfinished business, the chair might advise the word on the oral arguments were conducted today on the case on legislative confirmation of the additional executive appointments, and apparently the legislature was not victorious. So. But we'll have yet to see a formal opinion of the court. Mr. Urien.
Does that mean then we will get on with the process of confirming those names that we have before us and no longer hold them as ransom or however?
As we're sure we have all the appointments, I think I just uncovered a couple more, Mr. Urien, that we don't have, and we are looking into them. Sort of hard to be sure that you really do have them all. Is there anything more to come before the House under unfinished business? Special orders. Committee announcements. Excuse me, Mrs. Rudd, special orders.
I thought we had a motion on the floor to rescind. Was that withdrawn?
The motion to rescind passed, and it was carried over until tomorrow. It will appear on tomorrow's calendar. Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, under committee announcements, on adjournment, we'll continue to hear people have come up to testify on oil and gas back at the same place, second floor of the assembly building. And tomorrow morning, I believe at 8 a.m., we have some other people coming in to continue to give testimony on oil and gas. And again, at 1:30 tomorrow afternoon, those hearings will continue. Thank you.
Committee announcements. Mr. Brown.
Mr. Speaker, another reminder, 2 p.m. tomorrow, and I really would like the members of the Select Committee on Telecommunications and others to be present. You'll notice that today the right across the clerk's desk was Senate Bill 696 relating to the television demonstration project. So our business tomorrow is very timely, meeting of the House Select Committee on Telecommunications along with the Television Advisory Committee, including several gentlemen from the broadcasting industry from Anchorage, at 2 p.m. in the House Resources Committee room.
Mr. Parr.
Mr. Speaker, Select Committee on Education will meet at 4:30 today on HCR 113 concerning the option to buy AMU. Mr. Dellenbach, the president of AMU, will be there to discuss the matter with us.
Any other committee announcements? Mr. Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, House Commerce is rescheduling Senate Bill 577 dealing with leases, Senator Miller's, so that'll be rescheduled at a future time. We'll be taking up HCR 100 and HB 676 dealing with construction contractors.
Mr. Malone.
Speaker, I had planned a House Finance Committee meeting for 7 p.m. this evening. The afternoon, however, is about shot, so what I'd like to do is to move that meeting from this evening to time of adjournment of this House. We have a light agenda. The bills to be considered as follows. House Bill 557 by the Governor dealing with utilities locations. House Bill 707 by Fisher appropriating money for an international oil conference in Alaska. Senate Bill number 415, dealing with bonds required in public construction, and Senate Bill 557, an amendment to the teacher retirement law, sponsored by Senator Croft.
Mr. Miller.
There are no further committee announcements. Two requests to be excused from the call, Mr. Speaker. I'll move that Representative Wallace be excused from the call from 11 o'clock tomorrow on for the balance of the day.
Also call attention to the body. We do have a joint session tomorrow at 11 a.m. with Senator Gravel. 11 a.m. So we will have a relatively short session tomorrow, most likely. Mr. Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I had information from Representative Kelly, who is in Anchorage and is ill, so I'll move and ask unanimous consent that she also be excused from the call of the House tomorrow.
No objection. So ordered.
There's no further business to come before the body, Mr. Speaker. I'll move and ask unanimous consent. We stand in adjournment until 10 a.m.
Without objection, we're in adjournment.